especially with the holdouts and all the injuries and all of that stuff.
Oh, absolutely. And between the Zeke and the Gordon situation and Antonio Brown's nuttiness, this tells you exactly why you want to push your draft off as late as possible. Do it Labor Day. Yeah,
no doubt. Andy, thank you. Have a great afternoon.
Hey, you too. Thanks, guys.
Take care. That is Andy Behrens from Yahoo. By the way, Brown has already responded. He wrote, "While I disagree with the arbitrator's decision, I'm working on getting back to full health and looking forward to rejoining my teammates on the field. I'm excited about this season and appreciate all the concerns about my feet." So he's not going to retire because he doesn't get to wear the helmet he wants to wear.
Man, good for him.
What a relief.
Man, I'll tell you, he's really taking one for the team here, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you thought for sure he was going to hang it up, right?
I really thought that he was just going to say, you know what, if I can't wear that, I don't want your millions for years on end. Forget it.
It's great stuff. Coming up, we have a 4 o'clock fight coming your way on 101 ESPN.
Welcome to the 4 o'clock fight, brought to you by 101 ESPN, St. Louis's sports station. In the red corner, the challenger, Average Joe Listener.
Meet, what are we fighting over today?
We've got some Cardinal tickets. On Friday, August 23rd, the Cardinals host the Rockies, and that night, 30,000 fans ages 16 and older, they're going to add a mesh pullover. It's a mesh pullover Cardinals jersey to their wardrobe, courtesy of Bayer. Get your August 23rd tickets at cardinals.com/promotions.
I expected the Rocky Mountains to be a bit rockier. Playing the Rockies.
At you John Denver, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
You're a mountain man, aren't you?
Sure, yeah. I like doing the fun mountain stuff, skiing, not so much hiking. Maybe.
Are you a skiing
guy? Is it skiing or is it more rolling for
I'm
you?
Actually a really good skier.
I would love to see
I'm
that,
I'm a
honestly.
Really good skier. Not like, I've done it maybe six times in my life, but I picked it up easily.
What is it, what do they say when you're doing
lessons? You got to do like a pizza.
And then what's the straight one called? French fries. French fries pizza.
I never did the lessons. We just kind of went out there with some friends. I think I was like maybe 11 my first time. We just tried it, and it wasn't that bad. I've never done snowboarding. I heard
you spend the first day on your tail.
A lot of it, yeah.
All right. Sounds good. I want to see Meat ski.
I feel like it'd be more tumbling than skiing.
I don't think
so. I'm going to surprise you.
I think he's athletic.
I do think he's agile for a big guy.
You could have just said he's agile.
Thanks, Ron.
Although he is wearing a shirt that says, "I may be chubby, but I'm effective."
Right.
Big rig shirt.
And our guy, Scott Putnam, brought us some goodies earlier, and he said, "Hey, sorry, man, I couldn't bring you a shirt. I couldn't find one big enough."
But he did.
Everybody's taking shots today.
He brought you a bag.
It was great.
Brought you a hat.
I had your back. Just remember that.
Yeah.
This entire time.
You've never made a fan.
I thought it was funny.
Not today. Today's been a good day. Maybe I'm turning over a new leaf, man.
Right. Yeah, I feel like we've been through this before. Like, you're going to be nice, and then it's like, oh, damn it, I ruined that one today.
Well, I'm not.
We'll start tomorrow.
We'll start today.
Okay.
It's still going well.
Okay.
All right, let's bring in today's fighter on site here as we have our Blues Caravan going on here, starting tonight at Dave and Buster's after our show. 7 to 9, it's going to be Chris Kerber, and it's going to be a blast.
Ferrario, I guess.
The whole crew. So we got Mike. Mike, what's going on, man?
How
you doing?
Hey, how y'all doing?
Doing good, man. You ready to take on Mega Mind today?
I hope so.
All right, well, good. Well, you're doing it either way.
Yeah, you don't have much of a choice now.
Yeah, that's true. I'm in the chair now.
You know, it'd be really funny if Mike just said, you know what,
no,
I changed my mind, I'm out.
I'm good.
I just put the headset down and walked off.
That would leave us in a tad bit of a pinch, actually.
I think it would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be
Mike,
really
do
good.
It.
Okay. Yeah, Mike, got to go. All right, here we go, Mike. You ready?
Let's do it.
Well, either way, it's happening. Question number one. The Cardinals will be in Kansas City for a two-game series with the Royals starting tomorrow. Who was the Royals' 2015 World Series MVP? Was it Ben Zobrist, Salvador Perez, or Eric Hosmer?
Perez.
Question number two. The Cardinals will open their 2020 home schedule against the Baltimore Orioles for some reason. Who has their number 5 jersey retired with the O's? Is it Earl Weaver, Jim Palmer, or Brooks Robinson?
I'm going to say Earl Weaver.
Question number three, Mike. Which team currently holds Major League Baseball's worst record at 35-80. Is it the Tigers, the Orioles, or the Marlins?
Right now.
Right now. What are you laughing at?
You were, must have been in a pinch again when you got the baseball standing.
Exactly. It was a rush, man.
Exactly.
It's been a tough day.
I'm going to go with Marlins.
And question number four. The Cardinals are tied for the NL single-season Grand Slam record. In what season did they hit 12 Grand Slams as a team? Little hint, it occurred in a season after the 95 strike. So was it, and that's hints for Randy really more so than you. Was it 98, 2000, or 2004?
I'm going to go 98? I'm going 98.
Final answer?
Final answer. Okay.
All right, sounds good. Let's bring in Randy. Me, just to clarify in that question, by the way, that's this year, right? The top, the first thing there before Randy comes up. Because if they're tied for the 12, that's not the case since they have three of them.
No, like for history.
Oh, ever, huh?
Like, yeah, ever, in ever.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I get it. Right on. All right. How do you feel like you did, Mike?
I did okay.
Feel pretty good?
No, yeah, I do.
All right, good.
Yeah, I do.
Good, good, good.
Even if you lost,
I still win.
Right?
Yeah.
See? Damn it, I love your attitude.
Thank you.
It's the best. Randy.
Yes.
Mike's got the best attitude.
Mike has a great attitude.
Oh, my God.
Mike beforehand.
He's so happy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's do this right hand. There we go.
That was a really fun transaction.
I saw that.
So Randy was holding the microphone with the right hand. So Mike did, you know, what a gentleman would do. He reaches out with the left to shake his hand. But Randy inadvertently changes to the other hand. And it was a back and forth, almost looked like a dance move that these two did. Can't wait to see the dance. Mike, you got good moves. Randy, you ready for this?
Ready, sir.
Here we go. Question number one. The Cardinals are going to be in Kansas City for a two-game series with the Royals starting tomorrow. Who was the Royals' 2015 World Series MVP?
2015 World Series. Kane was the ALCS MVP. And the World Series Most Valuable Player was... It's not Jermaine Dye. That was the White Sox World Series MVP, wasn't it?
He was long retired by then.
Yeah. I think it might have been Hosmer. I'm going to go with Hosmer.
All right, question number two. The Cardinals will open 2020, their home schedule against the Orioles.
Yes.
Who has their number 5 jersey retired with Baltimore?
I think that might be Brooks Robinson, former third baseman for the Orioles. I'll go with number 5, Brooks Robinson.
He just died a couple of months ago, right?
Dead or alive?
Dead.
Dead.
Okay.
From what?
Good fielder.
Life.
Yeah, life. Yeah. Sometimes life wins.
Yeah. It just catches up.
Yes.
Question number three, Randy. Which team currently holds Major League Baseball's worst record at 35-80?
35-80. I think it might be the Tigers. I'm going with Detroit.
And question number four, Randy. The Cardinals are tied for the NL's single-season Grand Slam record. In what season did they hit 12 Grand Slams as a team? And a hint for you, Randy, it did occur in a season after the 95 strike.
So that would leave 96 through 19.
That's correct.
I'm predicting it didn't happen in 19. I'll do the lifeline here.
All right, Randy, you've got 98, 2000, or 2004.
I'll go with... 98, you had McGuire. 2000, you hit a lot of home runs, too. Might have their record. I'll try 2000. That was a better team.
We've got a winner.
The winner and still champion of the 4 o'clock fight, the Fastlane.
The 4 o'clock fight, represented by Halverson Claude, your St. Louis personal injury attorneys. At Halverson Quote, we don't get paid unless you win. Call today for a free consultation.
Mike, he got you, man. 3-1. It is Salvador Perez. He was the Royals' 2015 World Series MVP. Brooks Robinson, it's his number 5 jersey that is retired with the Orioles, who the Cardinals will see in the home opener next year. The worst team in Major League Baseball right here today with a record of 35-80 is the Detroit Tigers. And the Cardinals hit 12 grand slams in 2000. So, Mike, thanks for playing, man. Try again.
Well, thanks for having
me.
It's my honor.
It was great. Mike here with us at Dave & Buster's in Earth City. By the way, tonight from 7 to 9, Chris Kerber and Alex Ferrario are going to be here. It's our first Blues Caravan of 2019 as the Stanley Cup champions will open up defense of their title in October. And as we approach training camp, we'll have Blues Caravans every Monday night. It is.
Well, Randy, yes. Real quick, I didn't mean to. I think I killed Brooks Robinson. It was actually Frank Robinson.
Oh, okay.
Damn. So I didn't mean
Well, we know. Sometimes we get some stuff wrong.
I'm really sorry, Brooks.
At least we didn't go with Robinson Cano, who's simply on the DL.
Yeah, he's not dead. Well, that's different.
True.
But yes, Brooks Robinson, 82 years old. He's still kicking it.
Frank Robinson. But he didn't kick many when he was playing either. He was really a solid defender.
Oh, yeah. But Frank is the one who's
all right. It's 4:15. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. The Cardinal bullpen did really well over the weekend, but they didn't get much help from the rotation. That's next on 101 ESPN.
You're in the fast lane on 101 ESPN.
You know what you have down there and how many innings you have. And, you know, it's not to say we didn't have the innings to bring it home because we clearly did. But it's just a tough sniff to do that consistently in the fifth inning. And because we've had to do that a little bit, so we're just getting to the point where, you know, a little short on pitching as far as innings go.
You ascended to the managerial job about 13 months ago, and as Mike Shildt ascended to the managerial position, Mark Badaska ascended to the hitting coach position, and ultimately he was named the assistant hitting coach to Jeff Albert this year. Albert is still here, and Mark Badaska has reportedly been fired by the Cardinals, and Jobel Jimenez has been promoted from Memphis to replace Badaska in the Cardinal dugout. Obviously, the Cardinals have a lot of issues offensively, but it's interesting, going back 5, 6, 7 years, the Cardinals would send players down to Memphis to get them fixed by Buda, and now apparently he's gone.
I think that just looking at this, I feel like you have a clash of two different styles is really what's going on here. Jeff Albert is new school, very progressive, and Buda, very old school. You see it, hit it, communicates really well with the players, by the way. And that's not to say Jeff Albert doesn't, but I'm just saying guys do like him, and you're right. I remember Randall Grichuk was one of those guys. They kept sending him down. He'd go work with Buda, get his rhythm, get his timing, and all of a sudden he'd come back, and he'd go on a tear for a little while, and then he'd need another tune-up again. But it seemed like maybe the clashing of the styles turned to clashing of heads. And one thing that you'd like to have on any team is a one idea or an approach. Now, every hitter is a little bit different, but you want to have your guys preaching some of the same things. That's not to say mechanically, hey, this is what we do, but approach-wise, maybe. This is what we do as a ball club, and maybe they didn't have that as much. I like Buda a lot. I'm a big fan of his. I don't know where exactly he's going to end up landing, but I know he's got a lot more big league time left in him. Disappointing news to me because I like Buda.
And by the way, he is nearly, you talk about new school, old school.
He's old school.
Nearly 30 years older than Jeff Albert.
And that could have a lot to do with it. You do want people to be on the same page while also allowing a difference of ideas every now and then. It's probably a good idea if you have two people or three people, you have a room full of coaches who are capable of tossing out different ideas, different thought processes, and hopefully, you know, if everything works ideally, you come together, you pick the right ideas and then implement those. So it's good to have a little bit of conflict, but if that's all the job is, if you've got two guys who just can't stay on the same page at all, it's just not going to work out. You've got to have at least people moving in the same direction while having a slight difference of opinions every now and then.
You can have that on staffs, and you're right. That can be a good thing. It can be a productive thing sometimes when you have a little different view of things.
It means you're considering everything.
Correct. But it's not productive if, in fact, and I'm not saying this is the case here, but I've been around teams like this where you talk to one guy, and then you go talk to somebody else like, oh, screw that.
Yeah,
screw
right.
what he's saying. Try this. Mm-hmm. That's not going to be very productive overall for the organization. Either way, the organization ends up making a little bit of a change. It'll be Jimenez now as the assistant hitting coach. And
Joe Bell.
The thing that we want to see the most is just production overall out of this offense and continued production. I don't see firing the assistant hitting coach and then all of a sudden everything changes, but right. Who knows?
Now, the Cardinals over the weekend didn't get tons of innings from their starting rotation. On Friday night, Dakota Hudson went only 4 innings. Wainwright gave them 6 innings on Saturday night. And then, of course, yesterday, a tough outing for Miles Michaelis. And at the end of the day, the Cardinals are going to have to get more innings from their starting pitching. You just can't put that sort of stress regularly on a bullpen.
No, and Mike Schilt has talked plenty about it, just saying the model is not sustainable when you're doing something like that. Now, Friday, that was his decision, and it was due to the fact that you were bookended by off days, and he didn't like the matchup for Hudson going forward, and the Cardinals were in a position where they were trying to stop a skid of 5 games, and he believed that that was going to give them the best chance. And when you look back at it, obviously it worked out very well. The bullpen came in, gave you 5 scoreless. They were fantastic, and were so all weekend. But going forward, you're absolutely right. You got to get more. You got to get guys deeper and deeper into ball games. The last thing that you want as an organization, as a club that's fighting through the thick of it right now, is to turn your biggest strength into a weakness.
Right.
Well, how do you do that? You overuse them. You overwork them, even while other guys are stepping up and have done some big things and have grown into bigger roles. Giovanni Gallegos has grown into an enormous role. And by the way, in good time, because Gant has kind of regressed a tiny bit here recently, and maybe it's due to the fact that
he's
was
been
used
a ton. Yes.
You need guys to continually step up within that bullpen, and maybe Junior Fernandez, maybe Ryan Helsley will be some of those guys as we move forward, but you got to eat up innings. That's what starters have to do, and not just eat them up, not just go out there and give up 6. Like, they need to be quality. This team needs to be able to rely on their starters, at least the first 4, while you're still trying to figure out the 5th.
On a micro level, if you continually go to Matt Bowman, eventually, as the season goes on, if you wear him out, he's not going to be effective for you at the end of the year. So
then he can go to Cincinnati and light it up. It's big deal.
Yeah, you can do that. Yeah. But then on a macro level, you pull it back and you look at the entire bullpen. If you're going to them far too often, that is obviously going to be a problem by the time you get to September. And over the weekend, and it was just this weekend, but it's kind of it's a view of how the entire season has gone. You have 5 innings of work out of the bullpen on Friday. 3 innings, which is fine. You'll certainly take 3 innings out of your bullpen regularly. If you do that, that means you're not asking them to work too much. But then 6 innings yesterday, they got the win, they swept the series, and that's great for that series. You just can't continually do that, otherwise you are going to gas them.
And I just don't know where that comes from, because I understand the Hudson situation, but as we get into the end of August and September, is Dakota Hudson going to be able to give you 6 innings? That's BT, you had to live that. That's a hard thing for a pitcher to do. Flaherty has never really done it. I hope that he can do that this year. Michaelis has done it before. I hope he can do it again. And at this stage of his career, well, I would love to see Adam Wainwright continue to give the Cardinals innings. I kind of hold my breath because of his age and injury history.
Well, right now, Miles Michaelis, I think, is about the only guy I'm pretty confident will give them 200 for the season, which I don't think is... That's not ideal.
You know what, though? That's pretty much par for the course when it comes to Major League Baseball. Yeah. I think there were only 9 guys in the NL last year that had 200 innings. I mean, that's just kind of it. Now, I agree with you where it's not ideal, because I think you had a couple of guys that you looked at, especially coming into the season. I thought Carlos was going to be a 200-inning guy. So that puts a major dent in what you're doing. And I guess if, in fact, there is going to be any regression as far as innings out of the bullpen, which, again, is not incredibly sustainable, you're going to have to continue to have guys... whether it's that guys like a Ponce de Leon, that maybe he ends up in the bullpen again and eats up a bunch of innings. Maybe it's a Jake Woodford that has to get called up and eat up innings. Like, you have to continually get quality maybe out of the pen. I don't want to see that for the next couple of months total, but sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
It's interesting when you look at the top teams. Verlander and Cole are third and fourth in innings pitched this year. It's not a surprise. Trevor Bauer, by the way, leads all of Major League Baseball with 168 in the third. And he got traded. And then Texas, Lynn and Minor are tied for sixth. Both have 155 innings pitched this year. And then Berrios from Minnesota, Strasburg from Washington. Greinke is 10th. So the Astros have three of the top 10. So that kind of shows you. I was wondering today if the Cardinals can make the playoffs. I think they have to go with a 13-man staff and a 4-man rotation. They have a 9-man bullpen. And then do what Tony did in 2011. And if a guy's struggling at 2 1/3, get him out of there and use the wealth of bullpen arms that you have.
Yeah, you can definitely do that. Well, you're going to do a 4-man staff anyhow.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, throw the extra man in the pen. Once again, it's great to have the model that the Astros have. That's what everybody wants, mm-hmm. is to have that, where you just roll those guys out, bing, bang, boom, this is what we got, and then we'll use our 7, 8, 9 guys. Every team is built like that. You don't have to be built like that all the time. I don't know if the Royals are the best example since they had their lockdown bullpen, but they certainly didn't have the starters where you look at them and say, oh gosh, here they come. No, but they had a pen that locked some stuff down. The Cardinals have one of those as well, and the hope is that it stays that way.
And the truth is, if any team needs that more than others, it's probably this Cardinals team because they're so imperfect, and that's true of a lot of clubs in the National League. Well, really, you can go throughout baseball, and even the best teams, the Yankees, they are certainly flawed. The Astros don't have a ton of those flaws. Everybody else does have that to an extent. I think maybe this particular Cardinals team, the way it is built, it needs more than a lot of those other teams to get more innings out of its starters. I think other teams can live without it. I don't know if this Cardinals club can.
Fun fact, the Yankees have used Chad Green as a starter 9 this year as an opener.
Uh-huh.
9-0 in those games.
Look at them go.
That's the bullpen. That's if you use a bullpen, use an opener, and you have enough starters that can give you, like Paxton gives them innings, Tanaka. Yep. They had that bad stretch right after the break. But if you have enough guys, 3, to give you innings out of a normal starting rotation, you can use an opener and have it be really effective.
Well, do they have a starter behind the opener? Like they have like the same guy that keeps eating up innings?
Yeah, and that's a huge part of it,
too. It's nice to have. But, well, and maybe that could be, as you're trying to get creative with stuff like this, maybe that is Michael Wacha, who's looked a little bit better out of the bullpen, and then he comes into a different kind of game and eats him up. Or it's Daniel Ponce de Leon and Ryan Helsley serves as the opener. As much as you don't like to have to go down an avenue like this, sometimes you got to do what you got. It's all about winning ball games.
Think outside the box.
Yeah.
If you can be creative to get wins, be creative to get wins. I have no problem with that at all. Next up in the fast lane, the Cardinals did get the sweep against a Pirates team that's now 4-24 since the break. What can we take away from a series like that? We'll break it down next on 101 ESPN.
This is the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN.
Marte is swinging a miss, and the Cardinals come from behind and win it. 11-9. Highlighted by the grand slam by Thomas, and it's a sweep for Pittsburgh.
The Pittsburgh Pirates are 4-24 since the All-Star break. Overall, they're 48-69, 15 and a half games back in the National League Central, and obviously well out of the playoffs. And it looks like they've kind of bailed on Clint Hurdle. Guys, if you tell me before the season starts that in August the Cardinals are going to sweep a series, I don't care who it's against. I'll say, I'll take that. And if it's against the worst team or the best team, if they would have swept the Dodgers last week, I'd take that. And against the Pirates, I'll take that. Especially at this time of year, you want to win and bank as many victories as you can.
Yeah, they're on your schedule, and that's the only way you can look at it. Same way you're going to look at Kansas City for a couple of games, and you hope to go to Cincinnati and continue the role that you're on. Now, I do think that we all know that the Pirates are not the Dodgers, they're not the Cubs, they're not the A's, or the Astros. The last four opponents that the Cardinals faced where they ended up 3-8 out of the 11 games. Just not the same class, and things didn't go well against the better teams, the playoff-type teams. But they're still in the thick of things. They won these games. You'd like to see them tread a little bit of water better than they were able to do against those teams. Mm-hmm. You'd have loved a .500 record against those four teams.
Was that three wins?
3-8
Yeah.
Yeah. Two against the Cubs and one against the Astros.
And we were hoping for 5 or 6 against those
teams. It would have been nice, right? At least if you're able to do that. So if you're just trying to look at sheer talent, which teams are better, I think that we already knew that coming in, that those teams were probably better than you. Again, you never know what happens if in fact, you play a long series, and who knows what happens in a couple of months. But right now, I take a lot of good things out of the series. First of all, the offense has been coming around. Again, if you want to point to the Pirates pitching, great, that's fine. Love what I saw yesterday, certainly. A team that is resilient. Miles Michaelis did not have the best outing after having like 6 in a row where he's been ridiculous. And by the way, he's been great at home. Wasn't his day yesterday. Josh Bell got him a couple of times. And by the way, he looks like he's getting hot.
Yeah.
And the fact that he could get hot and the Cardinals still win the game is a big one. But the bullpen was great. The offense is showing signs of life. The youngsters are doing their thing. Hopefully they'll get a chance to do so. And if you're just joining us today, Randy Rosarena has been called up also. Jose Martinez finds himself on the IL with an AC joint. He left the game yesterday with the shoulder when he collided with the wall. So I take a lot of good things out of this, man. Anytime you win 3 games in a row, you have momentum.
And you know what? They took advantage of mistakes, and the Pirates are a bad baseball team, and they did a couple of really dumb things yesterday in that big inning. The 7th inning, was it the grand slam that happened?
Mm-hmm.
You've got the pop-up that Reyes didn't get to in left field, which was in the air for about a dozen minutes.
I think Josh Bell could have got to it from first
Dude,
base.
Dude, I don't know what in the world was going on. It looked like he was trying to defer to short, and it didn't. I don't know what was happening.
The old, I got it, you take it.
But nobody called it. If you go back and look at the replay, I didn't see anybody's mouth open and say, it's mine, or I've got it. Nobody said anything like that. And then you have Kyle Crick in the inning maybe hitting Munoz on purpose because he was unhappy about the double steal. I don't know.
At the very least, emotion took over, right? Like he got upset and tried to heave one through the wall and ended up hitting him.
Yes, because if you saw right before that, he stepped off and ran toward third because nobody was covering, and you had a runner over there leading off, and he took exception to that, so he was certainly distracted. Then he hits a guy. A couple of batters later, you take huge advantage of that with Lane Thomas's at bat. So that's a good sign. You just hope that continues. That the Cardinals, look, any good team has to take advantage when other teams are stupid or when other teams do things they're not supposed to. The Cardinals did that over the weekend. Can they continue that? This is when we find out.
Guys, Andrew Simon at MLB.com wrote about contenders, 10 contenders that need a guy to step up. And for the Cardinals, as you might guess, it's Matt Carpenter. I love Marp and I love his work ethic, but I just don't see it happening after 4.5 months.
No, I definitely understand the idea of that. And honestly, I mean, if I'm writing the same article, I'd probably pick him as well, just because you know how good the lineup is when he's the guy setting the table. Hit 36 home runs last year, and it did come around for him after a horrible, horrible start. But I agree that when you look at it, it doesn't look like it's going to happen to that extent. And the hard part is going to be, as a manager, when you're making your lineup every day, you still have that in the back of your head that he's been that guy.
Yep.
And this is a guy that we have leaned on, not only to set the table, but to clear it. Like, he has been your offense for spurts throughout his career. And it's also, and whether it's not top of mind, it might be reminded to you every once in a while that, hey, by the way, we got this guy for a couple more years, so you probably can't bury him. But you also couple that with, we've got some young guys that we believe can do something. While Tommy Edman doesn't have the upside that Matt Carpenter has, he's been a tad bit more steady with the glove, can play all over the place, gets on base, runs really well. You have options.
And I wonder, I know there's a lot that went into the firing of Mark Badesca. If you haven't heard, Badesca fired today, and the Cardinals called up Jobu Jimenez from Memphis to be the assistant hitting coach.
Did you just call Jobu?
Yeah, I did. Joe Bell. Because I want him so badly to be Jobu.
Just give him rum.
He's got a nickname.
But I wonder if Carpenter's lack of success has anything to do with Badesca's lack of a job.
I don't know. I doubt it. I think
that would suck.
It would.
It might just be more a differing philosophies between coaches or something. I don't know. I don't really think that's a lot to do with it. Where I do agree with the sentiment of this team really needing Carpenter to kind of be himself, because it's great and everything, the production they've gotten out of Thomas, and Edmund started to do some things over the weekend. That's awesome, and hopefully a Rosarena, whenever he gets an opportunity to play, is able to contribute as well. But I think it's difficult to have to rely on those three. I would much rather have the steadiness of Matt Carpenter, the typical steadiness that we've grown accustomed to in the last several years. Without that, I think the job of getting into the playoffs is a whole lot tougher.
All right, I got a question for the two of you. So that was Matt Carpenter was who he said would step up. Do you guys have somebody else in mind? If you had to pick a player as a key to the team's success down the stretch that's not him, who would it be?
Number 46, still the guy. And he's cooled off a little bit. He had an incredible hot streak and has cooled off, but to me, Goldie is the straw that stirs the drink.
It's not even close that he's the guy. I'm going to pick a different one, though, just because I believe that he's going to do that, and I also believe that Marcel is going to do what he's been doing. I'm going to go Paul DeJong, because I believe that DeJong is going to play. He's going to be in there. He's going to be in there day in and day out. If those three are swinging it really well, I think that that's really dangerous for the opposition. I'm going DeJong.
In terms of position players, I'd agree with all of those. When it comes to pitching, though, I think it's got to come from the rotation. I think we're all more than comfortable with what Jack Flaherty's done lately. He's been great. But, man, they're going to have to get better work out of Dakota Hudson, especially because the fifth spot in the rotation is up in the air, and he's more of an established guy in the rotation. He's got to be better. I think they're going to have a very difficult time if he's not.
The problem is with the rotation, they're literally are one option. Is it Ponce? Is Ponce the only other guy? It's Ponce and Waka. If Dakota Hudson does struggle, and knock on wood that it doesn't happen, but his last, you know, 6-7 starts have not been fantastic, who do they go to? What do they do at this point of the year? You're past the having somebody lengthen out.
2 weeks left in the AAA season, so we aren't seeing Reyes. We aren't seeing Gomber.
Is it Jake Woodford that you're leaning on with your playoff hopes? And not to take anything against Woodford, but he doesn't profile as being a guy that's going to end up saving
you.
Who knows, though? I don't know. My question is where we all knew that depth wasn't there as far as starters once those guys got hurt. And again, it all happened with Carlos Martinez. It all started there in spring training. But, man, you're in some serious trouble if a guy like Dakota Hudson doesn't step
up. That's the guy, man. If Martinez could pitch in the rotation, a lot of this talk would be completely different. I think his absence from that spot has hurt them in a big way. And we don't talk about it a lot because we've been focusing on a lot of other things. But that is huge, not having Martinez part of this rotation. He was supposed to be their ace, and he's not. He's not even present when it comes to that.
And if they are struggling, and you don't have Dakota Hudson, and you're still struggling with Waka, you might go at the very least, I've talked about this before, to Gant being part of an opener scenario. And whether it's Helsley giving you three and Gant giving you two or three, but try to stretch out Gant at least that much. Because they're not using him in the late innings. They're not using him in leverage situations much anymore.
Gallegos is kind of taking that role.
Yeah, so you might as well take a shot because we know he has the stuff and his velocity is still there.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. I was over at Mizzou this morning, got a chance to talk to the St. Louis and Brendan Scales, the tight end who's going to get some reps this year, and also the young receiver who really came on last year, Barrett Bannister. We'll hear from both of those next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN.
You're in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN.
Missouri is halfway through training camp, 17 practices, and today was number 9. And I had a chance to stop by. Albert O. still not practicing. Barry Odom said that his knee is banged up and he's day today, but he'll be ready for the opener on the 31st when the Tigers go to Wyoming. Kelly Bryant looked good in practice again today, and the defense, which had an upper hand against the offense in a scrimmage on Saturday, continues to display that upper hand. But the offense has some pretty good things going for them. They have a really good little slot receiver by the name of Barrett Bannister. And I had a chance after practice today to talk to him about this 2019 season. Barrett Bannister gets ready for the 2019 season at Missouri, halfway through training camp. It's amazing how fast it goes, isn't it?
Yes, sir. I was looking the other day. He said 18 and a half days to our first game. I was like, wow, it's pretty quick.
Yeah. And I know the coach said you're going to start installing some stuff for Wyoming, but man, you guys have so much to think about with football and school starts in a week. There's a lot going on.
There is a lot going on. I think the school part I'm not as excited about, but it's something we got to do. And, you know, it's just take every day one at a time and keep putting in the work.
As you went to work this summer, what did you want to do? What was your main thing to accomplish?
I think the main thing I wanted to accomplish was get the timing down with Kelly and keep improving that with some other quarterbacks, and I would say just continue to get stronger and faster. I think that was my two main goals.
It's not easy to develop that timing either. You really need to develop a chemistry, don't you?
You do. It takes a lot of routes, and it's not just going out there and working one-on-one. You got to be able to have defenders on you and know how these routes are going to be run different ways against different leverages and coverages, and you know, it's something that we're going to be working on until the end of November, and hopefully if this gets overturned till December or January. And so, I mean, that's something that you just got to go in every day and put in the work on it.
Barrett, from what you've seen, how good do you think this offense can be?
I think the sky's the limit for it. I think we have a lot of different pieces to it. We have running backs, we got receivers, we got tight ends, we got an O-line that'll protect, and then obviously Kelly's a dual threat guy who can beat you on the air or on the ground. And so, you know, defenses are going to have a tough time looking at all these different parts and a lot of moving pieces.
And we go back to the little things. What you have to do is avoid mistakes. When you have that much talent, it's a situation where the only team that can beat Mizzou at times is going to be Mizzou.
Exactly. I think that's one thing that Coach Dooley's really made a big emphasis on, is we can't focus on ourselves, and we got to take our egos out of this, and there's only one ball that can go around to everyone. And so there's a lot of good players that need to touch the ball during the game, and so we got to just make sure we keep our heads on straight and work as a team.
One other thing, this seems like a really fun group. It seems like you guys in practice enjoy it and are having fun.
Oh, I think that's the best part of it. You know, a lot of people, whenever they get up to this level, this is more of a job for them. And I think everybody in this locker room is out here to have fun, the coaches included. And that doesn't mean we don't take it serious, but we know when it's a time to have a good time and then time whenever it's to focus in and go get our job done.
Thank you, sir. Have a great year.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Barrett Bannister, wide receiver for Mizzou. And guys, Kelly Bryant doesn't have the arm talent of Drew Locke. He's not going to throw the ball 55 yards downfield in a beautiful rainbow and drop it into somebody's hands. Guys like Barrett Bannister, guys like Albert O, guys like Tyler Beatty coming out of the backfield, those are the people I think that'll be most effective. I think Kelly Bryant's job, aside from using his legs, is going to be getting the ball into the hands of his weapons on the perimeter and let them do the job.
It's kind of what we're actually getting used to seeing more and more around football, right? You get it out of your hands as quick as possible. Yep. And get it into playmakers' hands. But you have to have the right playmakers. If you have guys that just have straight-line speed, that's not going to work out very well, right? Guy just wants to run a nine route. That's not going to work out for that guy. But you hope that guy's going to step up. I'm actually a little bit surprised to hear that the defense has been ahead of the offense early on, because that whole D-line that's kind of gone out the window the last couple of years.
Yeah,
hasn't it?
And they have a new-look defensive line. They've only got one returning starter. And in the scrimmage the other day, a lot of offensive guys were hurt.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the reason for it. But and you have more returning starters on defense. Your back seven, is aside from Terrez Hall being gone, is pretty much the same.
You mentioned the injuries on offense. Having Akui Bunim back would be a really big
that's
thing.
Well
you
done. Can't,
I was just going to call him Whoa.
Yeah.
What? Oh.
Oh, that's
oh, saying
it.
His name?
Albert O.
Yeah, Albert O. But if it's a
say it again.
Akui Bunim?
Say it again.
Akui Bunim?
Akui Bunim. Got it.
Yeah, it's a really nice name.
It's a really nice name.
I love it.
Yeah. Albert O.
But you got to have that tight end. I mean, he's incredible. So if you can have him, that takes a lot of the focus, or will help take some of the focus off the edges, and that's what I think they really need. But if he's got a hamstring injury, and I think it's what it sounds like it is, because I know he's had that wrapped up in practice. If that slows him down, that's going to be a bit of an issue. But having him healthy would change a lot.
It would. And he was riding the bike today, and he's not limping. So hopefully it is something that will have him back by the 31st. If he's not available, a guy who actually committed to Alabama a couple of years ago, decommitted and then committed to Missouri, Brendan Scales might get some time. And I talked to Brendan earlier today. Getting ready for the season at Mizzou is tight end Brendan Scales, a St. Louis product. First of all, you're halfway through camp now. It's amazing how fast it goes. How's everything going for you?
Going well. This year I'm just playing more confident with Coach Fadale around. And Coach Finley was great, you know. He taught me a lot with Coach Fadale. I had a base, and now he's just taking my game to a new level.
So much, pretty much everything when you have your physical ability is confidence, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So, and how are you playing more confident? Is it because you know what you're doing? You don't have to think anymore?
Yeah, I think I don't have to think anymore. I'm not as worried about what coach is thinking because I know he's going to teach me. And Coach Finley was doing the same. He was doing well, but I was thinking way too much. And now I know exactly what I got to do, and I'm just flowing out there now.
Brendan, it's got to be interesting to look around that offensive sideline and see all the talent. This offense has a chance to be really special.
Yeah, it does. It's amazing being around those guys, being around just great players, and just learning from them all. Every position, the lineman, the quarterback, the tight ends, the wide receivers, everybody's stepping up.
Yeah, I know that you talk about improving all the time. What's the biggest thing that you came into camp hoping to get better at?
Honestly, really just confidence, because I know with confidence I can be the player that I know I can be. So just being confident, knowing my role, knowing what I need to do, and just going out there and executing.
When you are dealing with what you've gone through the last couple of years where you're not getting a bunch of time on the field, how did you avoid just hitting rock bottom confidence-wise?
Honestly, I was pretty close to rock bottom with confidence because I thought I was going to come in and play, you know. So I had to get myself to where I got rid of my ego and just being a part of the team and playing my role. And then once I started going hard in that, that's when I got my opportunity. So it was real humbling.
Brendan, I think it's interesting to watch with Kelly Bryant on the field, the dancing, the fun that he has. Yeah. It seems like that fun permeates to the rest of the offense. Is that an accurate observation?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. He's a leader. Without a doubt, he's a leader of the offense. And when he brings that type of energy, everybody's loose. Everybody's just ready to play. And so being behind that is amazing.
How do you think this offense will do? I know that the scrimmage wasn't what you wanted the other day, but how good can this be?
I mean, I think the sky's the limit. You know, I wouldn't want to put any limits on us because, I mean, we got great runners, great receivers, great quarterback, great line. I mean, with a great coach. And so, I mean, there's no limits for us, I don't think.
I was talking to Ronnell Perkins, and I think it's really cool to see St. Louis get represented again. You, him, but all the recruits. It's pretty cool to see St. Louis at Mizzou.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing, you know. When I first came in, there weren't a whole lot of guys. Their commitment to Missouri wasn't as deep as it is now. And seeing Coach Odom go out and recruit guys real heavily out of St. Louis, Kansas City area, it's awesome.
And I remember talking to you when you made the decision about how, since you were 6 years old, you wanted to be a Tiger. Yes, how has it lived up to what you thought it would be?
I mean, it's all of it and above, you know. Especially coming here thinking I want to play, being humbled by God, and just being put in the situation that I am now, and having the time to be able to get out there and get time on the field, it's amazing.
It's amazing how quick that first game comes around too, just 18 days away.
I know, it's crazy. We were just like 40 days out, and I was just thinking, like, man, it's getting kind of close, whatever, but now we're getting real close, so yes, sir.
Have a great season. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Brendan Scales, the 6'4", 240-pounder, he can run. When you get recruited by Alabama and Nick Saban is ticked off when you decommit, you're a good player.
You are a good player. And also, to that same exact point, it's hard for players like that have been on top of the world to check the ego. And that's what he said he had to do. Stop worrying about me so much, worry about us. And I feel like every player gets to that point in their career where they kind of figure that out. And it's great that he's been able to get to that point.
And he'll have an opportunity this year, whether it's playing behind Albert O or giving a guy that gives Okoye Bunam a couple of snaps off, because they really don't have another pass-catching tight end there. And hopefully the St. Louis and the Lafayette product, Brendan Scales, will get that opportunity. By the way, great parents here in town and a really good family. So our best to Brendan Scales and Mizzou this year. Coming up in the fast lane.
Yes.
I'm just looking at this thing. I don't know if we're going to do it or not. It says Meats Landlord is the absolute worst. But coming up next, the NFL is back.
Well, she kind of is.
Yeah, NFL is back, and so are NFL officials. Believe it or not, our next story is about something good an NFL referee did. That's next before Take It or Leave It on 101 ESPN.